Good morning, this is London. I'll be reading the Decatur Herald and Review for today, Tuesday, January 16th, 2018. I hope you're all staying warm. It is so cold out there. We're going to begin on the front page, and our first article is called Reflecting on the Past, Looking to the Future, and is submitted by Claire Hettinger of the Herald and Review. Comes to us out of Decatur. Dozens brave weather to celebrate King's legacy. More than 50 people braved the slippery roads and below-zero wind chills Monday to march up Martin Luther King Jr. Drive in memory of the fallen civil rights leader and the movement he championed. It was the 32nd year for the annual Freedom March, a Decatur tradition that has taken place in rain, snow, and bitter cold. The march began downtown at the Decatur Civic Center and continued a mile north to Church of the Living God Temple 1 at 1915 North Martin Luther King Jr. Drive. No matter the weather, the power of King's legacy always draws a crowd. It's a generational thing, said Cynthia Dennis, describing the impact of King and other civil rights leaders. Our parents told us about it, and we tell our child about it, and they can tell their children about it. Dennis and Patricia Tyus come to the event every year to remember the history and enjoy the traditional program at the end of the march. Especially for young people, the event is an important reminder of King's work, they said. I think it is a good community experience, said Kenneth Hentz, another dedicated marcher who has participated for the last 3 years, as well as a good experience for our youth to teach them about what he died for, which is justice and peace. This year marks the 50th anniversary of King's assassination on April 4, 1968, in Memphis. He's widely remembered for his message of nonviolence and civil disobedience, and for his commanding, passionate speeches. In 1963, he famously electrified a crowd of 250,000 people in Washington, D.C., with his dream of black and white children playing together, and was awarded the Nobel Peace Prize the following year. Surveying the crowd in the church on Monday, Decatur Human Relations Commission Chairman Derek Thaxton said the audience was a realization of King's dream. The commission organized both the march and a sold-out luncheon at the Decatur Club on Saturday. His intent was to have both white and black folks together, Thaxton said. The march takes place on a street that was renamed for King 30 years ago, this week. Decatur residents Jim Taylor and William Oliver came up with the idea to rename Broadway in the early 1980s, and they worked together for years to make it happen. The Decatur City Council voted 6-1 against the change in 1982. 6 years later, the council voted 6-1 in favor, and the street was officially named for King on January 18, 1988. Decatur Mayor Julie Moore Wolf said the community has made progress towards equal rights in the past 50 years, though challenges remain. The mayor cited the class of 10 new police recruits who were sworn in on January 4th. Of them, 4 are minorities, 1 woman, 1 Hispanic, and 2 African American men. We need more officers that look more like our community, Moore Wolf said, to applause from the audience. I'm very proud of this community. We come together to feed those who need to be fed. We take care of our own. We are doing a good job, but we do have work to do. Community leaders, clergy members, and elected officials were among the audience members. Democratic State Representative Sue Scheer of Decatur and Senator Andy Maynard of Bunker Hill both spoke, pledging to fight for fairness and equality for their constituents. The Reverend Tyel Cooper opened up the Church of the Living God Temple 1 to much thanks and praise from the city. Cooper said a religious service was appropriate because the church was the backbone of the movement for King. The community should be encouraged to keep faith and continue striving for change, Cooper said. Some days things are just not right, he said. We can't get comfortable now. In addition to organizing the annual events in honor of King, the Decatur Human Relations Commission plays a key role in protecting residents against discrimination, said Verzell Taylor, one of the volunteer commissioners. Established and governed by city code, the commission handles complaints of discrimination on the basis of race, religion, age, gender, and sexual orientation, among other factors. Two city investigators look into all of the complaints and give residents options for moving forward, which could include a hearing in front of the commission. If you have a complaint, you'll know where to go, Taylor said. There are two vacant positions on the 9-member commission. Anyone interested in applying to fill the vacancy should contact the City of Decatur at area code 217-424-2700. Keynote speaker H. Nicole Jelks, a Decatur minister, urged the audience Monday to remember the main ideals of the civil rights movement: equality, unification, and change, and to keep alive both hope for peace and courage to take action. Jelks described King as a man who followed God. He had faith that society would one day reach his dream of equality, even if he wasn't there to see it. For wisdom and a path forward, she said, she looks to the last speech he ever gave. It was April 3rd, 1968, the night before he was shot to death on his balcony at the Lorraine Motel. Like anybody, I would like to live a long life. Longevity has its place, King told the crowd at Mason Temple at the Church of God in Christ headquarters in Memphis. But I'm not concerned about that now. I just want to do God's will, and He's allowed me to go up to the mountain, King continued, and I've looked over, and I've seen the promised land. I may not get there with you, but I want you to know tonight that we, as a people, will get to the promised land. That does conclude that article. Our next article is also on the front page, and it's going to go on to discuss our weather. Winter weather, the title is called Snow Giving Way to Cold, is submitted by Tony Reed for the Herald and Review and comes to us out of Decatur. Crews continue clearing covered roadways. Salt and plow crews in Macon County were scheduled to hit the road at 4 a.m. today to clear the way for commuters in the wake of another snowy big freeze. Winds gusting to 24 miles per hour Monday night were expected to cause some locally significant drifting, which road crews planned to target and clear. Temperatures are not projected to warm up until Thursday, according to the National Weather Service in Lincoln, which said 3.3 inches of snow fell on the Decatur area into Monday morning. Macon County Engineer Bruce Bird said his plow drivers had done what they could on county roads Monday and would be back to hit them hard at 4 a.m. We're bringing on a full crew to get everything dressed up and ready for everybody taking off going back to work and school, he said. The City of Decatur's Municipal Services Manager, Daniel D. Mendenhall, said his crews were turning their attention to neighborhood streets after wrapping up clearing primary routes Monday afternoon. Mendenhall advised continuing to drive with caution as his trucks fanned out across the city neighborhoods. The best thing is to give yourself plenty of driving time, and if you don't have to be out, don't be out, he added. Sunday night's and Monday morning's snow, coupled with the deep freeze, sparked multiple crashes on interstate highways all day Monday. With I-72 near Decatur a particular trouble spot, we've had 12 slide-off accidents, with the interstate seeming to be the worst along secondary east and west roads, said Macon County Sheriff's Deputy T.W. Houck. Roads might appear clear, but there's a layer of ice on them. With the snow being slowly cleared away, the dominant weather theme for much of the week will be more bone-numbing temperatures. Today's high will struggle to hit 15 degrees, and tonight the low will be around 4 degrees, with wind chills dropping to minus 2 to minus 7. Jeff Mueller, director of the Oasis Day Center for the Homeless, said one man who lived on the streets had tried to bear the weather outside but found it was just too much for him. He ended up with frostbite in his fingers and is on his way to the hospital, Mueller said late Monday morning. The frostbite wasn't horribly bad, but it was there. Monday's wind chills ranged between minus 8 degrees and 1 degree on Monday night's air temperature had been forecast to hit a low of around 1 degree, with wind chills up to minus 15. Today's high will struggle to hit 15 degrees, and tonight the low will be around 4 degrees, with wind chills dropping to minus 2 to minus 7. The Oasis Day Center's normal attendance has jumped from 150 visits a day to more than 200 since the cold moved in. Mueller said the focus was on dealing with immediate warming needs, handing out blankets and gloves, and trying to ensure the homeless had somewhere to stay at night. Warming weather may help during the day a bit as the week plows ahead, but a slow but steady rise in the mercury is expected to begin Thursday with a high of 35, reaching a daytime high Sunday near 50 degrees. Patrick Bach, a meteorologist with the National Weather Service in Lincoln, said typical high temps for this time of year should be around the mid-30s, with lows in the teens. He said central Illinois appears to be doing a kind of bizarre weather swap with normally frigid places like Alaska. In Fairbanks, for example, they were at 20 degrees, and that is pretty warm for them. This time of the year, it would be more common for them to be below zero, he said. That concludes that article. And our last article on the front page comes to us from Martha Wagner of the Associated Press and is titled Shiver Me Library Card. It is out of Raleigh, North Carolina. New evidence of pirates' interest in books. Dead men tell no tales, but there's new evidence that somebody aboard the pirate Blackbeard's flagship harbored books among the booty. In an unusual find, researchers have discovered shreds of paper bearing legible printing that somehow survived 3 centuries underwater on the sunken vessel. And after more than a year of research that ranged as far as Scotland, they managed to identify them as fragments of a book about nautical voyages published in the early 1700s. Conservators for Blackbeard's ship, the Queen Anne's Revenge, found the 16 fragments of paper wedged inside the chamber for a breech-loading cannon, with the largest piece being the size of a quarter. The Queen Anne's Revenge had been a French slave ship when Blackbeard captured it in 1717 and renamed it. The vessel ran aground in Beaufort in what was then the colony of North Carolina in June 1718. Volunteers with the Royal Navy killed Blackbeard in Ocracoke Inlet later that same year. Tens of thousands of artifacts have been recovered since Florida-based research from Intersol Incorporated located the shipwreck off the North Carolina coast in 1996, but few, if any, are as surprising as pieces of paper. To find paper in a 300-year-old shipwreck in warm waters is almost unheard of, said Eric Farrell, a conservator at the QAR Conservation Lab in Greenville. Eventually, the conservators determined that the words south and fathom were in the text, suggesting a maritime or navigational book. But one word, hilo, that's spelled H-I-L-O, stood out because it was both capitalized and in italics, said Kimberly Kenyon, also a conservator at the lab. They turned to Johanna Green, a specialist in the history of printed text at the University of Glasgow, who pointed them to the Spanish settlement of Ilo, or Hilo, on the coast of Peru. The fragments eventually were determined to be from a 1712 first edition of a book by Captain Edward Cook titled A Voyage to the South Seas and Round the World, performed in the years 1708, 1709, 1710, and 1711. It is impossible to say who aboard Blackbeard's ship would have been reading the voyage narrative, a form popular in England in the 17th and 18th century, or whether it belonged to a pirate or some terrified captive. But some pirates were known to be literate, Kenyon said. For example, Stede Bonnet, the gentleman pirate, who joined Blackbeard in 1717, had his own library. It is not known if he brought his books on the Queen Anne's Revenge. A history of pirates written in 1724 mentions a journal belonging to Blackbeard that was taken when he was killed, and when Blackbeard captured a ship called the Margaret in December of 1717, the list of items taken from the ship included books, Farrell said. They were literate men, Kenyon said. People always assume pirates are ruffians from bad backgrounds, and that was not always the case. The survival of the paper fragments is perhaps even more unusual than their existence aboard the pirate vessel. The chamber in which they were found was a separate piece of a breech-loading swivel gun that was likely kept on the top deck because it was used as an anti-personnel weapon, Farrell said. Conservators don't have the cannon itself, which likely was salvaged or stolen when the Queen Anne's Revenge ran aground. In cannons of that period, wadding material, such as cloth or paper, would usually be stuffed behind a cannonball, so it's also possible someone just tore up the book without reading it to use it for firepower. Conservators had removed a wooden plug from the chamber so they could clean it when they discovered the paper fragments stuffed in there, along with pieces of fabric, in May of 2016, Farrell said. That mass was removed easily enough, but prying the fragments from the fabric was more tedious and time-consuming, he said. The combination of fabric and the plug likely protected the paper, which normally would have disintegrated in water, Farrell said. But the ability to read does not change the evil character of pirates, who ransacked, raped, and killed. The fact that they're literate doesn't mean they're not terrible, marauding people, Farrell said. It just adds some nuance. That not only concludes that article, but it also concludes our reading from the front page. We'll be moving into the local and state section, and our first article is from Claire Hettinger of the Herald and Review. It's called Cultivating Talent and comes to us out of Decatur. Art Farm to Highlight Homegrown Artists. A new business owner is following her dream to showcase local artistic talent in downtown Decatur. Peggy Beatty is the owner of The Art Farm, which is set for a soft opening today. She said there is something at the store for everyone, and she hopes it will be fun, approachable, and interesting. Don't be intimidated by art, Beatty said. It's just funky, cool, handmade stuff. The items will span every price point, ranging from $800 paintings to $5 makeup bags, she said. About 30 artists will be represented when the store at 252 North Park Street opens, and the goal is to showcase about 70, Beatty said. The hours of the business will be 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. Tuesday through Friday, and 10 a.m. to 2 p.m. Saturday. My focus is you can't really shop more local than this. Local store owner selling goods made by local people, she said. The store does not have a specific theme, just the idea of finding local talent, she said. She previously worked for the Decatur Area's Arts Council and said, through her work, she realized there are many talented artists in the Decatur area, but people are often unaware of them. I'm filling the void by bringing the art to Decatur and bringing Decatur to the art, she said. She also said she hopes to encourage people to email her, stop in, or call her if they are interested in being represented at the store. To me, art is in a million different forms. If it is handmade and hand-created, I will represent you here, she said. Beatty has previously hosted pop-up markets called Pop Local to showcase local artwork in downtown Decatur. The first event was held December 9th and 10th, 2016, in the former Haynes and Essex building at 130 East William Street. It was successful, and she followed up with another two-day opportunity in April in the Barnes Citizen building in the 200 block of North Water Street. Beatty said the pop-ups were not a test run for her new venture, but did show that the interest was there. This is something I've dreamt about since I was in high school, she said, to represent local artists and bring their talent to the forefront. The name of the business came from a joke Beatty's husband made, she said. Beatty was saving odds and ends, and her husband asked her if she was saving items for her art farm, and the name stuck. The art farm's downtown building has a rich history. World Finance was the last occupant of the space, and it originally was a butcher shop in 1885. When Beatty was remodeling the shop, she accidentally uncovered a mural that was on the outside wall belonging to the building next door, which sold genuine Bull Durham tobacco. The mural advertises the product and depicts a bull, which Beatty says is perfect for the art farm theme. People come in and say, did you paint this? Nope, I didn't have to, she said. It's pretty iconic and pretty cool. The goal for the space is to create a cool place to hang out, Beatty said. She will host events, workshops, and keep things fresh. Our goal for the shop is for it to always be different every time someone walks in the door, she said. I just want to run the gamut and push the envelope, Beatty said. My whole objective is to create and innovate and not stop. It is never going to be static in here. And that concludes that article. Now, some sub-information on that is, if you go, what? The art farm will feature handmade home goods, paintings, and more from local and regional artists. When? 9 a.m. to 5 p.m., Tuesday to Friday, 10 a.m. to 2 p.m., Saturday. Where? 252 North Park Street. And on the web? Facebook.com/artfarmdecatur. Okay, now we're going to move into a few of local briefs. And our first one is written from the Herald and Review staff report, comes out of Decatur. Car damaged by eggs. Police said a Decatur woman's car was covered with splattered raw egg down the driver's side that froze solid in the bone-chilling temperatures. The criminal damage incident happened Saturday night or early Sunday while the vehicle was parked in the 3600 block of East Frontenac Drive, police said. Detective Sergeant Chris Copeland said the 61-year-old owner said her car had previously been egged in December, but in the latest attack, a large dent was also left in the rear passenger door as well. She said she did not know who was responsible, and she does not want to pursue criminal charges at this time, said Copeland. However, she did not know if her husband would want to press charges. Also in Decatur, tenants suspected of theft. Tenants are suspected of stealing appliances and tools from a Decatur rental property, police said. Detective Sergeant Chris Copeland said the list of items taken from the home in the 2000 block of East Prairie Avenue included a washer, dryer, refrigerator, and oven. Assorted hand and power tools were also taken, he said. Copeland said the theft occurred between December 22nd and Sunday, when it was reported. Indicator, fire damages home. Firefighters dealt quickly with an attic fire in Decatur home early Sunday. Crews were called to 3289 Fields Court at 6:29 a.m. by the family living there, who had gotten safely out as smoke began to vent from the attic of their single-story house. The fire was knocked down within a few minutes, but firefighters were on scene until 6:56 a.m., checking for hot spots and cleaning up. Battalion Chief Jeff Haught said the cause is under investigation, but is believed to have been accidental. And in Decatur, police find shell casings. Police patrol officers investigating reports of multiple shots fired on a Decatur street Saturday evening found three spent .45 shell casings. Decatur Police Sergeant Brian Earls said witnesses had reported hearing up to four gunshots in the 1800 block of North Main Street about 7 p.m. Earls said there was no reported injuries and officers were able to find no signs of bullet damage. And at last in the briefs out of Decatur, winter gear rental. The Rock Springs Nature Center has cold weather gear for rent. Snowshoes and cross-country skis, boots, and poles are available for use on the conservation area trails at $8 for 2 hours or $20 for 24 hours anytime snow is 4 inches or more deep. For information, visit Rock Springs online at MaconCountyConservation.org. And from the Herald and Review calendar, today, Scams, Fraud, and ID Theft Workshop, 1:30 to 3 p.m., Lovington Public Library, area code 217-774-4322. The event is free. On Wednesday, Hibernation Quest Minicamp, 9:30 to 10:30 a.m., Rock Springs Nature Center. Find out why bats and groundhogs sleep right through the winter. And on Thursday, continuing the conversation, Racist Taboo, 6 p.m. at the Decatur Public Library. And something that you might be interested in, and a way to contact the Herald and Review. When you see or hear about breaking news, you can call the Herald and Review tip line at area code 217-421-6979. If you have a story, idea, an announcement, or a suggestion, we're here to help, and you can use that same number to make that call. And also in contacting the Herald Review, if you hear of an error in their reporting, they want to hear about it, and you can call them at area code 217-421-8905. Or you can contact them at ccoates@herald-review.com, and that would be ccoates, little c, little c-o-a-t-e-s, at herald-review.com. All right, I think that's going to be it for part one of the Herald and Review for Tuesday, January 16th, 2018. We're going to take a short break and then return and read part two. I hope that you'll join us.